Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. We have a whole bunch of guests here today, and we just hope that we're going to ramble on in a few different directions, and hopefully you will enjoy what you're hearing today. I'm just going to wish you another Happy New Year. And my name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Harrop.
Glenn Fink.
Julie Laferno.
Patty Mason.
Well, welcome. Welcome, everyone. Mary, you want to set us in some direction?
We're hoping later on in the show to get into a discussion about homeschooling. But before we do that, there are some current events that we want to kind of hash over. If anybody's been paying attention to the headlines today, there's a lot going on. I'm going to start out with the Attorney General in New Hampshire, who has written a letter to the Democrat National Party, because the Democrats in New Hampshire are saying, the Democrat Party in New Hampshire is saying, there's no point in having a primary. We know who our nominee is. So if you're a Democrat, and New Hampshire is one of the states you can do this, please vote in the Republican primary for Nikki Haley. The Attorney General is very upset about that. It's evidently illegal, and it is interfering with the election process, obviously, of the other party. So we will see how that goes.
You know, you're interfering with the Democrats' ability to be a Democrat, because you're going to deny them the ability to do a write-in candidate for their own party.
Well, do you remember years ago when Rush Limbaugh was telling people when Obama was running to write in Hillary? And he did that on the radio, and people were doing it, and he got in all kinds of trouble for that.
Well, it's in North Carolina, my understanding is in the primary. If you're unaffiliated, you can vote either in the Democrat or the Republican primary. That's my understanding.
You can pull whichever ballot you want.
Yes. I'm totally opposed to that. Each party should have the right to select their own candidate. And that would prevent this kind of abuse you just described. When you have people from another party selecting your candidate, that can't ever be good. Your party members should have the right to select who's going to represent them. Then in the general election, then these other people can vote for whomever they want.
Just like you don't want a non-citizen of New York City voting in a New York City election.
Because he has no skin in the game. Yes.
Well, is that all Democrats, not just unaffiliated, can vote for whoever they want?
Yes. That's New Hampshire rules.
That's a crazy system to start with.
I want to say something about the two-party system. At one point in North Carolina, I was registered as an unaffiliated voter. And I found out that because I was registered as an unaffiliated voter, I could not volunteer to be an observer at the polls. That if I wanted to be an observer at the polls, I had to be approved by the party that I was part of. And unaffiliated is not part of a party. And I understand, I guess there's some logic at that because you have accountability to somebody. But I think if you're unaffiliated, you ought to be just as able to be an observer at the polls as if you are affiliated.
We have unaffiliated in Craven County that are observers. And but the party has to support that, but unaffiliated to participate, and they participate in judge seats.
Okay.
And in Craven County, we do that, but it's back to Alan's point. The observer is observing for the party, not for the state.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought the observer was just there kind of as a neutral party to make sure. No, that's why you have Republican and Democrat observers. Okay. That's my misunderstanding.
One in a row.
Sorry.
No, thank you.
Well, you know, a related topic, Mary, is this issue that's started in Colorado and now in Maine, where they want to take Trump's name off the ballot because of supposed he was involved in a, quote, insurrection, unquote. And I believe there was an attorney general in a red state who indicated that he was ready to move to take Biden off the ballot in the primary if the court, Supreme Court, does not rule against this process. The Supreme Court has agreed to take the issue up, but this person said, well, if we too can play that game, if they're going to take our candidate off, we'll take their candidate off. I mean, you could just see what a Donnybrook this is going to become if it's allowed to stand. And the Supreme Court has agreed to take it. I just hope that they act on it quickly, because to me, there should be no issue. If you could take somebody off a ballot just because they're indicted, that does not prove they've done anything wrong. You could be indicted and for anything.
Well, also, as someone who lived in Massachusetts forever, Mayor Curley in Boston ran from jail and won. So, I mean, there's that. I mean, admittedly, that's Massachusetts. But, I mean, it does get ridiculous, because when you use, quote, the law, because it isn't really the law, it's politicization of the law, to play politics, you get into a whole nother area. And I'm going to go there with the Department of Justice, which has gotten totally ridiculous. It came out today that Ray Epps was sentenced to no jail time, 1 year probation, $500 fine, and 100 hours of community service. And this was done by a Zoom meeting, which means the judge had no intentions of ever having him there. And it has also come out that evidently one of the J6 defendants or representative or someone of that ilk had planned to serve a subpoena on him for civil rights violations, because if you've watched the videos, you understand that Ray Epps was one of the people who was telling people to go into the Capitol. You have to go into the Capitol. You have to go into the Capitol. And people who did nothing more than walk through the Capitol after the police opened the doors, they didn't even break down any doors, have been in jail for 3 years waiting trial, which makes no sense. And the other part of it was, now, let me pull this up with the article that I have here. It was reported that a subpoena was going to be served. Ray Epps was going to be served with a lawsuit at the courthouse during his sentences. Process servers were hired by the plaintiff, and our reporters were scheduled to be there to capture the moment Epps was served on video, and he was going to be charged with conspiracy to violate civil rights by one of the J6 defendants, Eric Clark. And that case had been filed in a Utah federal court. So you saw whatever was going on behind the scenes to protect this man from any kind of charges, which again brings up the question, who is this man? And if you go, I was on a search engine this morning because I was working on Right Wing Granny, and I was looking for this article, and every article I was pulling up from the mainstream media was talking about the conspiracy theories involving Ray Epps. So that's how the media is spinning this. So that's where we are, guys.
Well, I think there's a couple of issues that trouble me about this whole process. First of all is, all you folks that carry your cell phones around, all you're doing is inviting the government to track you no matter where you are, what time, whatever. This is right out of George Orwell's 1984. Mm-hmm. They know where you are, and that, to me, should be a violation of your privacy. If you're okay with that, then you should perhaps sign up for it or whatever. but you should have the ability to opt out that they cannot trace you.
But does your car have OnStar?
My car does not have OnStar, but what I'm saying is wherever it's happening, this is potentially taking our freedoms away, and we're sitting here allowing it to happen.
And one step further, DOJ is expanding its perimeters for January 6th to people who did not go in the building but were in the area.
And that's ridiculous. You're allowed to be in the area.
By the way, Alan, you referenced George Orwell's book, 1984. Let's also include George Orwell's book, Animal Farm, because some people are more equal than others in this whole situation. And we just need to understand, folks, go back and read George Orwell's books, and you are reading about today. And they were written, 70 years ago?
Yeah.
Well, it's clear to me that everything that you all are talking about, it's nothing less than political retribution.
Well, how do you explain Rahab's getting 100 or whatever hours of community service and little old 80-year-old grandma who walked through the Capitol after they opened the doors winding up in jail?
Well, it seems obvious to me that he's part of the problem.
Rather than part of the solution.
Mm-hmm. Rather than part of the solution.
There is one good news item about January 6th. Judicial Watch has come out and said they are going to pursue an extensive lawsuit, $35 million or something, against the government for killing that, what was that lady's name?
Abbott.
Ashley Babbitt, right. Mm-hmm. And so let's hope that goes forward, because that might reveal a lot of information.
Yes.
Because they'll be able to get in and get access to information that they haven't released.
Very good. Well, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Thank you for staying with the CCTA Wake Up Call.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. Coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Mary, go ahead. You have another topic.
I just have another comment about the insanity that is currently going on in our Justice Department. This story was found in Front Page Magazine. A U.S. Navy service member was sentenced to 27 months in prison and $5,500 fine for transmitting sensitive U.S. military information to an intelligence officer from the People's Republic of China. Now, the guy, if you look at his name, I'm not going to try to pronounce it, but he's obviously Chinese. I don't know whether he's a first-generation American or whether he's somebody who came here from China. But maybe it's time we start looking at our military to see if they might have possible foreign allegiances. That might be something to check. But he transmitted all kinds of training exercise plans and all kinds of stuff and got a good deal more than $5,500 for what he did. And initially, he was facing 20 years in prison, and he pled guilty. And he asked to be released until trial. And he also, the judge decided that he was going to give him, 10 years now? What did I say? No, 2 years.
Is this man an American citizen?
I assume since he's in the military,
he does not have to be an American.
But he might have been working towards citizenship because
he does not have to work towards citizenship.
You can be a foreign national and be in our military?
Sure.
Yep.
Well, that's not too smart, is it?
Yep.
It's not too smart, but the problem is that we're not having enough people volunteer that are citizens and so on. We had a big influx after the attack of 9/11. We had a big influx of patriotic Americans that came in, but they're getting out or whatever. And the other thing is the population in the United States is actually decreasing. Natural born. I heard on radio today that in 2023, there were 600,000 fewer births in the United States than in 2010. So that's almost 1 million. That's getting up towards 750,000 people. So the question is, how do you maintain your civilization and your society when your birth rates go down?
Now you import them.
Well, there's flooding over the borders, and you know, to me, that's not the solution. Not the way to do it. I'm not suggesting that either. That legal immigration might not be something that could benefit us. I'm not saying that.
Sure.
But what we're not talking about it. We're not talking about immigration. We're talking about invasion.
Exactly.
And back to what Mary's point is about the spy. Parts of the intelligence community, parts that deal with the crypto. If you're a civilian, you have to take a lifestyle polygraph. The military does not.
Oh.
And the rationale is because the military has harsher punishment for spies than civilians do.
Evidently not in this case. And it's interesting you mentioned about recruitment being down. The only service that met its quota this year was the Marines. And they have consistently met their quotas. The other ones and I don't know, I mean, we can make jokes about the Marines being a cult, but whatever they are, people want to join them.
Well, there's some reason why people are not joining. And maybe they're being discouraged by some of the policies that are coming out of the military upper.
You mean like having the Secretary of Defense be AWOL for a number of days?
Yeah. No, meaning that because if you're a certain color, you have to accept that you're a horrible person. Mm-hmm. And they give classes on that.
Yeah.
Yes.
You have to.
A general was crying in the Pentagon over it.
Oh, gads. So, not good. Okay, now we're going to totally switch topics now. And one of the things that is of concern to everyone in the community, and don't tell me you don't care about the schools because you don't have children, because the schools impact your real estate values. If you have lousy schools in a community, people don't want to move there. So it behooves all of us to be aware of the Craven County schools and what's going on with them. So I'm going to leave it to my education people.
Patty, do you want to talk about this graph that you presented about the decrease in the census in the public schools, and I'd like to kind of follow that up with a little discussion of the homeschool, but this is the graph that you presented, that you brought.
Folks, I'm going to interrupt for just a moment, and Patty, I thank you for that advice. We're going to say, first off, Wake Up Call is sponsored by the CCTA, Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association. We're a 501c3 association. Therefore, we cannot endorse candidates. But that doesn't mean that we can't have folks who are knowledgeable, who are also candidates, coming onto our show. And based on that basis, Patty, please welcome to the show again. She is a current candidate, but also she's also very knowledgeable in the subjects that we're talking about. So, folks, stay with us. Again, CCTA will not endorse candidates. Now, that can't stop individuals from endorsing candidates.
And
I just want to make sure.
We offer the opportunity for any candidate who wants to come on the air to call us, contact us, and we will put you on the air to talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Now, to Alan's point, in 2010-11 school year, there were 14,932 students that were attending Craven County Public Schools. There was over 15,000 that Craven County paid for. Okay, but and by paid for, that means our students could go to another county, like Arapahoe Charter School, and we pay for that. So anyway, in 2010-2011, there were 14,932 schools, or students. There were 26 schools. In 2023-24 school year, there are 12,612 students and 26 schools.
That's how many, 1,500 less, or a little more than 1,500 less?
More than 1,500 less. But we're claiming that we're over capacity. We've lost classroom space somewhere.
We've lost, well, because those classrooms are now dedicated to administrators. I'm sorry. No, I didn't mean that, but I did.
Well, and then the graph that Alan wanted me to talk about is, I belong to a group, we've been overseeing the school board for, as citizens, because that's what our Constitution says, it's the citizens who do the oversight. And from 2003, we were at approximately at 14,500, and it's gone downhill, and it's significantly gone downhill since Florence and COVID.
Yeah, well, those were the two significant events.
But the number of students in the county has not gone down. So where are they going?
They're going other places, because during COVID, when everybody was online learning and mom and dad got to see what the curriculum was, they decided to pull their kids out of public school and either homeschool them or send them to private school.
Well, if you look at that graph that Patty's describing, there was a downward trend that began before COVID. COVID was part of the problem, I believe. But I think that would trend goes back 2012. Mm-hmm.
But that's why
2012. But my point is that there's a dissatisfaction with the public schools that's been going on for 9 years. And I was surprised when I looked this up. I thought that if you looked at the numbers of students, this is statewide, that you would find that the biggest majority were in public schools, the second would be private schools, third would be home schools, so on. That's not the case. The actual numbers are, the public schools have the highest numbers, homeschoolers are the second highest. And I think if you looked at these numbers, that you would find not only an increase in the private schools, which there has been, but you'd find an increase in homeschools too. And what was disappointing this past year was we put forth a resolution. By we, I'm talking about the precinct that I represent. We put forth a resolution to get school vouchers, money for private school students and for homeschool students, because those people who are providing those educational services, they should get money from the taxpayer, because they are lessening the burden on the publishers. Okay. What they did was the General Assembly expanded what they call the Opportunity Scholarship Program. And what they did was they expanded it to the point where people with higher incomes could now qualify. So they did expand it. That was a good thing. But they did not include homeschools, which in my opinion was a serious mistake. And that needs to be corrected. And so hopefully this year, this General Assembly, they will address that. The other problem was they, instead of taking money out of the public schools to pay for the students that were on these Opportunity Scholarships, they just expanded the funding of the Opportunity Scholarship Program. So the public schools, they lost students, but they didn't lose any money.
No, they did. As their average daily attendance goes down, their income goes down from the state.
But they don't take it. My understanding is they did not take it out of the budget. In some states, what they do is they have a voucher, and it's an X amount of dollars. Whether the student goes to private school, homeschool, or public school, that's the amount of money that follows the student. Well, and that's how it should be, in my opinion, in North Carolina.
Let me ask a question now. Maybe you're, Patty, you're a little bit more savvy on this. Does the county support the school facilities and the federal government support the student?
No. There's four sources of money, two of which are federal. There's local, which is primarily the physical plant. There's the state, which is primarily the curriculum and mostly the teachers. However, the local are allowed to support teachers. And then the federals have two pots of money. I need that piece of paper. They have federal money, which supports the busing and the food programs. And then there's Title I funding, and Title I funding is your poverty funding. You're given a funding if you're a school where your parents are hard up to support you. And half our schools do get Title I funding.
So federal is almost all based on social engineering, and it's about 10% of the total budget, but it's all designed to be a social engineering activity.
Wow. And I once advocated getting rid of the federal funding, and I've been told by a previous school board that's too hard to do because the state budget has federal funding in it. However, I don't care. The state gives it to me. I'm only obligated to the state for that pot of money. And for the, when I get direct federal dollars, then I'm obligated to follow the federal. And if anybody ever asks, you know, I used to work for the federal government. No, I didn't have to deal with county, but I had to deal with 50 states. I had to deal with the U.S. government and however many agencies we had, and 126 countries.
But the point I'm trying to make, and it does not refute it or challenge anything Patty said, because she has the detailed knowledge of it, is that the state funding should, in my opinion, the funding should follow the student. The student goes to homeschool. The homeschooler should get that money. If it's $7,000, $8,000, I believe the average cost now is almost $10,000 per student.
Very good. On that note, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. Again, thank you for staying with CCTA. Wake up call.
Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
Hey folks, here's a tip. When you think firearms and ammo, think East 70 Palm. They've been on Highway 70 east of New Bern across from the fairgrounds for 31 years. Drew Preston and his staff know firearms. Gun sales have tripled in under a year, and women shooters are the fastest growing part of their business. Their great inventory, over 300 guns in stock, changes daily. And if you want something they don't have, they'll look for it. New and used, rifles, shotguns, and pistols. Buy, sell, or trade. And they also have many holsters, scopes, and other gun accessories. Every member of the staff is deeply knowledgeable, and every one of them is an excellent shooter. So don't just come for the inventory. Come for the thoughtful advice. East 70 Palm, your home for firearms, ammo, and answers. Highway 70 East, New Bern, across from the fairgrounds.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansburg, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
Welcome back from the break, from hearing from our sponsors and supporters. Again, this is a CCTA wake-up call. We've had a new guest and join us, and Brett Pike. Thank you for coming aboard. Brett, you want to give us a little bit about your background? Again, thank you for getting here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I was running a little bit late. I am Brett Pike. I am the founder of the Classical Learner Homeschooling Company, which has really blown up over the last few years with everyone in the country being forced to try out homeschooling. And the crazy thing that happened with that is parents got to sit in on what their children were learning. And it got so bad that it got to the point where the schools were telling the parents, you can't sit in, because they were mortified by some of the things that these schools were teaching. And for me, that was a natural transition because I was a teacher. I was in the system. I remember when I was doing my student teaching way back when, before I even had kids. And I knew back then I would never send them to public school. And the reason for that was not only some of the things that were being taught, where, I mean, really, it's a travesty where they're either teaching young people that your ancestors were terrible or you're a permanent victim. And either mindset is really destructive to a young person. It takes away hope. It takes away the love of learning. And so I was able to get out of the education system and start a homeschool company. And we just started building from the grassroots level. And now, I mean, we have thousands of families, and, you know, some of the families have 11 kids, and we're teaching things that really matter. When we study history, when we study institutions, we're doing it from a systems level and teaching young people, how do you track funding? How do you track people? How do you understand how these systems function so that you can not be reactive to what's happening on the news, but actually pick it apart and start to understand it for yourself? And I think that's what we need more of, and it's really lacking in the public school system.
So now, and as you mentioned, the news is no longer giving us the news, but they're doing an indoctrination process in most of the time. And if we went back to what was called the Mockingbird, the CIA deciding to plant what's going to be the story of the day, whether it's got reality to it or not, is a whole different story. Brett, you've also written a number of books. So can you just rattle off the titles of the books to put our mindset there?
Yeah, well, that was actually a good transition, because one of the books I have right here is called Operation Mockingbird and the Church Committee. Now, it's like Charlotte Mason style, and it's living fiction, but it's based in reality. And it's designed to introduce young people to these concepts, because I came through the system. I got a degree in history education, and I thought I knew everything, and I had never even heard. I got a college degree in history education, and we had never been taught, me or anyone in my class, what Operation Mockingbird and the Church Committee, which of course dates back to the 1970s, when the CIA admitted, it's not an accusation, it was admitted, that adjusted for inflation, they had spent billions of dollars bribing journalists. And it doesn't just stop there. It had to do with tax-exempt foundations like the Rockefeller Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation, leveraging their money to take over the university system.
Now, I want to put a little caveat there. Now, this was discovered in the 1970s, and it was actually going on since the 1940s.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it, and almost 30 years before it was, well, 25 years before it was discovered.
So pretty pervasive. And to think that young people aren't taught this, I mean, all the books are really... there's so much. Our monetary system, The Bear from Jekyll Island, which is based off of G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, but young people should understand how our monetary system works, and they should understand what the Federal Reserve Bank is, how the Federal Reserve Bank is purchasing treasury notes, but they're doing it with money that they just printed, right? So it's like, imagine you went to purchase something, but rather than reach into your wallet, you went to your printer, you printed some money, and you purchased that thing. And then you were able to take that thing and say, now all of you are going to work and be taxed, and we're going to be paid back by your taxes. And you say, okay, maybe. And I say, but we're also going to be paid back at interest. And you say, wait a second, you just printed that money, and that's where our tax money is going to? It's paying you back for that treasury bond plus interest, but You didn't need to raise that money to buy that bond. So you say, this is what our monetary system, this is where I talk about teaching young people to understand the world from an institutional level. How do these institutions really function? I was teaching a class this morning, which is probably where my brain was and why I completely embarrassed myself. And I teach this class, it's called Critical Thinking and Discernment. And I write two fake newspapers. One of them's the Daily Cat, which is based off of this, Charisma Cat's my villain, and the other is the Bear Standard. And I write these fake newspaper articles. I make fake sources, like full FBI fake sources. This morning we were reviewing a certificate of death that would have been issued based on one of the articles. And what we're teaching young people is to go through the articles, evaluate if the sources are primary and secondary, what the claims are, and if the primary documents actually back the claims, to learn the logical fallacies, which this dates back thousands of years to Greece, to basic systems that you could have in your mind to identify manipulations and arguments. So an ad hominem attack, a straw man attack, an appeal to authority, an appeal to emotion. And the children are actually going through the articles and looking for these logical fallacies. And then once they do that, we have them fill out discernment charts. And they break the information down into three levels. I know, and how I know, and it better be backed by primary documents or maybe a secondary document that they've discerned that they can trust, and that's fine. I think I know, and why I think I know that, but maybe we need a little more backing. And I heard, and where I can look. For example, in this morning's article, it was about a river being contaminated. And that was the claim made in the newspaper, but they didn't actually back that up. Well, one of my students, and these are elementary school kids, said, well, we can look to see if anyone's actually tested the water. And that's where we get to Operation Mockingbird and teaching young people the difference between listening to authority and accepting it as true, which authority has its place, versus, okay, authority has made a claim, but I'm a living being, I have discernment, and you now have to show me proof of your claim if you want me to believe what you're saying. And this is where we should be going with our education system.
Now, you mentioned you're working with elementary students. What grade levels? All the way up, sixth or seventh, or up, all the way up? Or?
We're actually working with K through 12. And in that class this morning, we had students in elementary school, and we had students that were in high school. And they might understand it on different levels, and the high school students might really start to take it to another level. But as a concept, I mean, Gavin Newsom in California, and that drudge in New York, whatever her name is, her name eludes me, New York, the governor of New York.
Hochul.
Yeah, Hochul. They both just signed a law about teaching school children media literacy. And what they're basically mandating, and all parents should understand this, because this gets to the crux of what are they teaching our children about thinking? They are basically having their school teachers teach the children that in order to discern truth, what you have to do is see if does something come from an authoritative source. That could be CNN, Fox News, New York Times, ABC, whatever it might be, right? It could be the CDC. Does it come from an authoritative source? And can you cross-reference that with does it come from multiple authoritative sources? And you know if it comes from multiple authoritative sources, well, then it definitely can't be a lie. They are essentially training our children to outsource their thinking to authority, which again, authority does have its place, but in the end, it has to be, okay, you've made a claim. Now, can you back that claim with something? And if you can't, I'm sorry, but I could put that under the I heard, I could put that under I think I know, but I'm not putting that under I know. And that's the schism between what our children are being taught and what we should be teaching them.
And I think it's important, Brett, to point out the link between the effort you just described that these two governors are doing and the link with socialism.
Oh, yeah.
Socialism inherently is you give your decision-making and your belief over to the central authority. That's what it's all about. And that's exactly what all this stuff is trending towards. And it's like the climate hoax, this idea that CO2 is going to destroy the planet. The children are indoctrinated with that. They're not taught how to assess whether that's accurate or not.
Right.
They're not taught, well, how do you investigate and see if there's scientific facts to back it up? All they're doing is told, this is what you should believe. This is what the authority tells them. And it can destroy our civilization. We do away with fossil fuels. So I'm glad that what you're talking about helps clarify and insulate these students from being little puppets to the socialist agenda.
And a quick plug, the CO2 is in the standards for science, for earth science for the state. And if you've ever participated in the standards development, which I have, it's a majority of whoever participates. I could be considered an English expert, and I'm only a secondary math educator. So it's the preponderance of people that are participating. No qualifications are sought.
In other words, it's science by vote and by majority vote, not by facts.
Correct.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back, and again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Brett, you're up.
Yes, we were actually talking a little bit about the history of education during the break, and we had previously talked about the infiltration of socialist ideals into the education system. And if you look back at congressional hearings, it's actually something that's not new. That in the 1950s, there was something called the Congressional Rees Committee, and they were looking into potential un-American activities from tax-exempt foundations. These foundations we touched on earlier, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation, and they launched this investigation, and they came up with this definition, un-American activities, because if you're going to claim something, you have to have a term. And they basically said that un-American activities are anything meant to change the laws of the United States or the way the United States is governed through means that weren't intended in the Constitution. And there was this amazing congressman. His name was Norman Dodd. If anyone wants to learn more about him, YouTube Norman Dodd interview. I believe it was with G. Edward Griffin. Amazing interview. And Dodd got access to the corporate minutes of these tax-exempt foundations. And what he found was shocking. First, that these tax-exempt foundations had, and this was going back to 1908, and he was reading back through their corporate minutes, and first he was shocked to find that they had discussed ways of getting the American people to support getting into World War I, when the American people at the time, when they elected Woodrow Wilson, had no interest in that. So that was shocking enough. But then you get to the post-war era. And now these corporations are having a meeting, and they're talking about they were interested in preventing the American people from getting back to what they called an anti-war mindset. So they said, what's the best way to do that? And they determined that the best way to do that would be to alter Americans' understanding of education. Now, you go back to George Washington's farewell address, which everyone should read. It's fantastic. He warned, his warning was, don't get involved in foreign entanglements. Wow. Yeah. So they decide they're going to change Americans' understanding of history. And they come up with this idea that they're going to bribe the top historians of the day, but they were rejected, and that's great. People had principles. They came up with another plan, the university system. They handpick 20 college students from around the United States of America. They fly them to London, and they give them $400,000 in grants, which is a tremendous amount of money at the time. You fast forward 10 years, and those students made up the governing board of the American Historical Association. By the way, the medical system was conquered in the same exact way. It goes back to the Flexner Report. This is a modus operandi. This was how these foundations were functioning. They make up the governing board of the AMA, I mean the American Historical Association, AHA, and they at the time had tremendous influence over history textbooks and over the way history teachers' best practices were trained. And although the agenda might have changed, where at the time it was about war mindset, and then, you know, now what it's about, oh boy, boy, oh boy. But the plan was there, it was carried out, it was documented by Congress, and they did successfully infiltrate and take over the way history was being taught in America. So a lot of these history teachers who are great people are being given this history that comes with an agenda behind it, and then the students themselves, they aren't necessarily being taught to get back to primary documents. They're being taught, can you memorize these historical dates? Can you memorize these historical figures and these very cherry-picked narratives? These days, usually cherry-picked around race and, again, victims versus oppressors, Marxism, that's this is core tenets. And since then, they've used the education system to fundamentally brainwash Americans into supporting whatever, I change your understanding of history, I could change the policies you support today, and that's was really the goal behind it.
Does this go along with the fact that today our law schools are not teaching the Constitution, they're teaching case law? Rather than go back to the original documents, they're teaching case law. Mm-hmm. And I say that as the mother of a kid who went through law school. She did not learn the Constitution. She learned case law.
You know, where is the bar located at? The bar that all the lawyers register with. Where do they register?
In their own states.
It's actually better than that. There are state bars, but the central registry is in England.
I didn't know
that. It's not even an American institution. I try to be careful with the way I talk about law because I'm not a lawyer, and as I tell people, I don't give legal advice. But one of the things I do is I teach courses on the Bill of Rights and the American Revolution, getting back to not just what the Second Amendment is, but why it's important, right? At Lexington and Concord, the English were ordered, they were on their way to take munitions. There's a reason these things are encoded in, and they don't, our rights don't come from the Constitution, but they're encoded in the Constitution for a reason, right? And then I teach the U.S. Constitution, and civics is being taught wrong in America because the average American can't tell you the structure of the federal court system. Our students, our children should be taught, and this was what Thomas Jefferson talked about. He said, a public education is necessary for the sole purpose, and this is his autobiography, of teaching young people their rights. Well, young people can't tell you, adults can't tell you, the structure of the federal court system. You have the Supreme Court, right? You have the appellate courts, and then you have the district courts, and what these different courts do, and then the different things that, the different tools that are available to us. Like, how many Americans know what an affidavit is and how to file an affidavit? We should all know that. How many Americans, and I know people that have used this to prevent their employers from making them put on a mask.
I'm smiling because I used to work for a federal government agency, and the seniors used to hate coming into my engineering meetings because if we were getting ready to make a major design decision and it was based on law, I was having the engineers go to the blackboard and diagram the sentences if the lawyers wouldn't answer my question.
I love it. And that's what it's all about. And how many people know that when the judge does something he's not supposed to do, right? Or something is wrong in the process, that if you properly document that and then you take it to the next level of court, the appellate courts, you could actually win your whole case on that, regardless of the facts of the case. People think that the legal system, they see the corruptions, and we all see it. I mean, a lot of stuff that happens is gross. But the reason for that is there is this tool that is our legal system. And the American legal system, all its flaws, is as good as any legal system in the entire world. And it is this tool that the George Soros bought district attorneys, they know how to use it. And the average American, we have got away from a time. Thomas Jefferson was an attorney, right? John Adams was an attorney. And you should read their writings and hear the way they talked about this stuff. I mean, Thomas Jefferson, one of my favorite things that he wrote when he was talking about education and the legal system, he said that when we came to America, when our grandparents came to America, his grandfather, right, that these people were farmers and they were great people, but they didn't understand the law. And they gave the English crown grant title to a land that they didn't actually own by accepting grants from the crown, and they didn't understand that. But he said now, two generations later, Thomas Jefferson, he said, we are attorneys and we do understand that. And we have to teach that to our kids. So when we teach young people civics, it's not about like, oh, there's the Supreme Court and they do stuff, you know, and they determine constitutionality, right? That's nice. We have tools that are available to us, and our ancestors, our forefathers understood how to use those tools. And that is what parents, and that is what the school system needs to get back to teaching our kids.
And that's one other thing that I learned from a boss, because I was really frustrated, and said, why doesn't the government do this? Because it would be more efficient. We weren't built, our government was not built for efficiency. It was built to delay a decision so that the right answer.
I think we're all very concerned about the problems in the public education system. But there are some things we can do about it. First thing we need to do is we need to eliminate the federal Department of Education. Yes. It didn't exist until Jimmy Carter's administration, and he put it in, and that needs to be done away with, because that's centralizing and controlling what's being taught,
which gets
back to what you're talking about. Who's controlling what's in the curricula in the schools? And the second thing we need to do is we need to elect people to the local boards of education that have the courage to stand up and make changes. Mm-hmm. We made a proposal. Some of the people at this table were with me when we did this in November to the Craven County Board of Education. We had four resolutions: eliminating critical race theory, eliminating DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, eliminating transgender indoctrination, removing the climate hoax issue and making it a scientific discussion. We made those presentations. Have not heard a thing back. We requested a response. It's been since November. Haven't heard a word. We're going to follow that up. But we need people on these local boards of education that have the courage to stand up and say, you're not going to do this anymore.
And until
we got to change it.
Until 4 years ago, Title 20, which governs the federal education, there used to be, until 4 years ago, Section 1 was all crossed out. And the footnote was, we want to abolish Title 20, and Title 20 will be run by an executive order by President Nixon in 1974 until we can get rid of Title 20. However, it was discovered there was no way to funnel money to the local school systems without the federal Department of Education existing, and that's why they got rid of that.
Wow.
Wow. Folks, I think we're going to have to wrap this up for right now, but Mary, you wanted to add a couple of things in?
I want to mention that on February 16th, which is Tuesday night, that is the CCTA public meeting, and our speaker that night is Lockwood Phillips, who is the owner of 107.1 and the publisher of the Carteret Times. And he will be talking about media, but he will also be talking about the role the CCTA plays in grassroots and the impact that we can have on the politics of our area. It's at Stanley Hall Ballroom, which is downtown New Bern, 7 o'clock, January 16th, not February.
Folks, thank you again for staying with us. This is the CCTA Wake Up Call.
CCTA Wake Up Call airs Saturday at 6 a.m., some days at 11 a.m. and 8 p.m. on WTKF 107.1.
Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
The God and Country Christian Alliance has a simple mission, but it is a profound one. They want to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern. They want to restore the Judeo-Christian values upon which this nation was founded to all levels of government. And they want to encourage and activate pro-family voters. Simple, but not easy. The God and Country Christian Alliance meets the third Monday of every month at Moore's Barbecue on MLK in New Bern. Meetings begin promptly at 7 p.m. and end by 8:30. To enjoy dinner with the group before the meeting, arrive between 6 and 6:30. Both the food and the company are good. Meetings include speakers and discussion, and their annual banquets are legendary. Join them on the third Monday of each month for a refreshingly candid view of the world and our place in it.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military, just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.